Let's begin now to move into conversational change, having just very briefly recovered the main core essential parts of NLP. Let's get into some new work. The art of conversational change. So let's first have a look at, let's just whiz through these. Let's first have a look at the presuppositions of conversational change. Firstly, language is a filter. And so it's not just a means of communication. Language determines how we structure the reality we create. So let's just do this exercise briefly. So what I'd like you to do, I'd like you to say, just look around you, okay? And now I want you to close your eyes. Just close your eyes. And just say out loud to yourself, over and over and over. Everybody can do this. Just say out loud to yourself, brown. Go for it. Brown, 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 brown. Go for it. Okay, stop. Very good, stop. Okay, keeping your eyes closed. Now what I want you to do is, I want you to, in your mind, remember everything in the room that you see that's brown. Now, open your eyes. Look at everything that's brown. Okay? How many more things are you noticing that's brown now you've got brown going on? For example, how many people are noticing more things that are brown than you were before, yes? Good. So your words create your universe for you. So what you focus on, for example, creates your universe just by the words that you use. And the language, so I'm moving on then to point two, the language you use has a massive, and I mean a massive impact on your state. So for example, if I say, what's the difference between I'm saying, I'm pissed off, right? Versus saying, I'm peed off. Just try it on for yourself. Just try on, try it. Don't have to say it out loud, but just try on, I'm pissed off, and then do I'm peed off, and notice if there's a difference in your intensity of the feeling. And then move it from I'm peed off to I'm weed off. There you go. See, your state changes immediately, just by the words alone, because it changes what you do in your head. Then change from I'm weed off to I'm urinated off. Different representation again. What about I'm tinkled off? Yeah? See, if you changed it from I'm pissed off to I'm tinkled off, you go to a different place. And remember, we said that state is dependent upon what resources you can access. So if you word it to yourself, rather than I'm pissed off, that you're tinkled, for example, you go to a different state and have more choice of behavior. So, for example, when I'm tired and I'm feeling is exhausted, rather than say I'm exhausted, I tend to say I'm recharging, because that gives a different feeling for me at the same time. Yeah, same thing. We can try this actually. Does anybody have any reasonably mild but a little bit irritating or whatever kind of pain that are experiencing right now? Yes, Sally, first up with your hand. So what have you got going on, darling? You've got a toothache, yeah? Whereabouts is your toothache? Oh, it's in your mouth, obviously. which tooth is it? Which tooth is it?
It's upstairs on the left-hand side.
Upstairs on the left-hand side. So give me a word. Give me three words to describe the pain. Three words.
Irritating.
Irritating.
Nagging. Irksome.
Nagging and irksome. I don't know how to spell that.
It's an I.
Okay, good. What else have you got? What else? Give me three more words. Three more words. Three more words that are different to these words.
Annoying.
Annoying.
Distracting.
Distracting.
Unwanted.
Unwanted. Yeah. Good. Excellent. Give me three more words. First thing comes up.
Cold.
Cold.
White.
White.
Thorough.
Thorough. Good. Excellent. Give me three more words.
Now.
Now?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. Who said that?
On a scale of 1 to 10, how's the pain now versus what it was earlier? So if it was 10 was intense and 1 was you're not feeling at all, how's the pain different now?
About 3.
It's about 3. Where was it when you started?
About 8.
About 8. So we've gone from 3 to 8. Excellent. Give me 3 more words. Ooh. About its feeling right now.
Duller. Negative.
Negative. Next one.
I wanted to say sausage then.
Sausage.
I have no idea why.
Excellent. Good job. Just trust the unconscious. 3 more words.
Ooh. Dinosaur. Oh.
Dinosaur. Yes. Go on. What else? Describe the pain. 3 more words. 2 more words.
Ooh, absent.
Absent. What else? Last one.
Comfortable.
And so on a scale of 1 to 10, where's the pain now?
1.5.
1.5. Excellent. Give her a big hand. Very nice job. Excellent. So, what we notice there is that the labels that we use to describe things actually create the experience themselves. So when you run out of words, basically painful words, once you run out of painful words to describe it, it changes to the point that you don't experience it anymore. And that's how conversational change, the basis of how conversational change can begin to work for you. Now, if we could take a pain which was like, you know, right up there in the tens, down to 1.5 in, well, probably in less than 2 minutes, just imagine what you could do, knowing this stuff now. Just imagine the techniques and the amazing transformation you can create in your own life and other people's lives just by focusing on how to use and direct your language. So let's have a look at number 3. Which is the language somebody uses has a direct correlation to their internal representations. The words that come out of people's mouths do not come out of people's mouths by accident. They basically are saying the words that they use are being generated from the internal representation they're creating. So what we do is when we're speaking to somebody, as soon as they say something, we create an internal representation of that, then we talk about the internal representation. That's what's actually happening. But we can also use language, therefore, to, one, detect, so we can use our other people's language as a detection tool for what they're doing inside their head. And therefore, we can then begin to change our language to change their internal representations. Language, in another way, is a mirror. Language is a mirror of the mind. It's a mirror of the mind. So therefore, change your language, it will change your internal representations, and vice versa. Now, next one. Whenever you communicate with someone, you cannot not change someone's internal representations. Whenever you communicate with someone, you cannot not change their internal representations. Because to make sense of what I just said, you had to go inside and create an internal representation to make sense of what I just said. So you cannot not change someone's internal representations. The question is are you changing the person's internal representations so that they're becoming more and more empowering, or are you actually giving them language that actually makes them to have negative internal representations? What we want to be doing as practitioners is creating positive internal representations in the minds of our clients that moves them from present state associated, problem associated, to future or present state or future state slightly dissociated, and solution-focused. Next one, language is presuppositional. It presupposes how a person is thinking. Your language presupposes for the listener how to think. So when you say language, what you're basically doing is you're giving them a gift called make this picture in your head, or say this to yourself, or remember this language, or whatever it might be. You're giving them an opportunity to create thinking inside of themselves. And the language has presuppositions in it. Every sentence has things that are presupposed in the sentence, because every sentence has deletions, distortions, and generalizations in it. So therefore, what the native English language speaker is doing when they're speaking is they are deliberately trying to explain what's going on in this internal world, but they're not giving you all the information. They give you enough information so that you can presuppose the rest of it, so you can make up the difference. Does that make sense? The challenge becomes when two people get together and start talking, and what they do is they start mind reading what the person is saying versus actually listen to what's actually being said or what's actually being presupposed by the person. And that is the basis for much, much pain in the world. Because most people are not eloquent enough to explain what they're really thinking inside their head. So there's too many deletions, distortions, and too many generalizations in the sentence. And then the other person makes a completely different meaning out of what the person said. And therefore, on that basis, all sorts of conflict happens, all sorts of misunderstandings happen, and at a big level, wars and things like that are generated and created just because of simple miscommunication and misunderstanding. So on this basis, conversational change is possible. Question, AJ, right at the front, please, to Steve.
I just wanted to actually point out an interesting thing that happened recently with a friend of ours. He came back from holiday with a very, very stiff neck, and his wife said, the symptoms of sound very worrying, because he was saying that he felt it in the bone. And she said, I'm worried it's cancer. Mm-hmm. And she said it to him and said it to a number of other people. And I know that I mentioned to Hazel, I said, you know, this is crazy mm-hmm. that she's even putting it out there.
Yep.
And when he took this on, and I could see a lot of distortion and generalization going on in his...
Which is driven from his beliefs.
Completely.
Yep.
His physiology literally went down like that.
Yep.
And it was disturbing to watch, because he went from being fairly upbeat to being very depressed very quickly.
Sure.
Understandably.
Yep.
But what I found most interesting was about 2 days later, a lady came up from London who, she's a massage therapist and she does treatments and all that kind of stuff. And she said to him, this is nonsense, absolute nonsense. I get this all the time. I get exactly the same thing. Go to the chiropractor, she'll sort it out in a jiffy. Mm-hmm. And it was like seeing a whole new man suddenly, within minutes, transform from somebody who was like this to somebody who was like...
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was just so powerful to watch just how powerful language, because that's all it was,
yep,
became an internal representation. Mm-hmm. That changed his whole outlook on life.
So it became language coming, event coming from the inside, filtered, creates an internal representation of it. Now, if you hold an internal representation for long enough, can that internal representation become a belief?
Absolutely.
Yeah. In fact, most of your beliefs are just longly held internal representations that you keep having over and over again. And then, again, they're internal representations. They're not true. They're just ones that you create. So I certainly know that you know, if a doctor, for example, someone you you believe in, for example, that you know they speak the truth, for example, were to give you a piece of bad news, for example, just the words alone that you hear can create such a strong internal representation of a big fear, like the fear of dying, for example, that you can then manifest that from a perceptionist projection point of view. Absolutely. So the worst thing you can ever tell someone is that piece of news. And I know when I know Joseph McLennan, who does a whole piece on the health stuff at Tony's guy does the health stuff at Tony Robbins' UPW, tells a story about his mum, for example, when she was ill, and the doctor said to Joseph, "You know, your mum has cancer." And he said that, "Okay, good. Firstly, I don't believe that." He said, "And you're never going to tell her that. You must never ever tell her. You must promise me that you're never going to tell her." As I understand it from the rest of the story, if I remember it, they never did. Joseph was very, her mum recovered fine, no problem, never had cancer, etc., etc. Because he knew the moment they said that to her, if she was to believe the presupposition or believe that statement, she would probably end up manifesting it. Absolutely, 100%. Yep. And that's why it's so important for us to create strong internal representations of what you want in your mind. For example, if you want to heal, for example, then you talk to yourself about healing. Talk and keep your language at a healing level. Create internal representations of body parts of you healing, for example. If you've ever done in the journey work with, for example, Brandon Bays, the visualization process is all about visualizing healing. Keep it focused on what you want versus what you don't want. So that's the presuppositions of conversational change. Let's now have a look at what's actually going on. So here's our client, and they are present state, model the world. Present problem state, model of the world. What you do is you use your language basically to move them from present state to desired state, model the world. Because they come in with very disempowering language around their problem. Very disempowering. What you've got to do is neutralize it. For example, we talk about this when we do metaphors, but they come in with very disempowering metaphors, for example, that they use. You know, I'm stuck, I'm in a hole, I'm banging my head against a brick wall, da-da-da. All these metaphors, for example, well, that's what they're doing. In their head, they see themselves hitting their head against a brick wall. You know, they see themselves in a hole, not being able to get out, closed in. That's what they're actually doing inside themselves. So we've got to find ways of structuring our language as a helping professional to move them from that stuck state to a more positive, empowering, desired state. And we detect it through listening to their language and then using our language to change their internal representations. Let's turn the page and have a look now at the rules for success in conversational change. Here's the things that you need to have in order to create the result for your client. Firstly, sensory acuity. We want to calibrate when the person comes in their present and desired state, their physiology and their tone of voice, and to notice how it's different when we ended up. Good. So rapport. Again, from rapport, of course, change is unconscious. So we want to be able to get our client into rapport so that they are less critical and less conscious, if you like, of the things that we're doing, so we can bypass their critical faculty so that we can get the change at the unconscious level. Rapport is one of the ways of doing that. If you don't have rapport and the person is basically talking to themselves the whole time, then it's not going to work. You've got to get them to the point where they are completely unconscious. They've gone into that peripheral vision state, for example, alongside of you. Personal congruence. What does that mean? What does that mean, personal congruence? What does that mean?
What I think that means is what we observe in the physiology matching their own language patterns. In other words, you know, are they saying what is, or are they sort of giving us a lie? You see what I mean?
Good. So that would be their congruence.
Yeah.
So what about our? What do we do as a person, as a helping professional, to have personal congruence? What do we need to do?
We need to make sure that we're matching that as well, so that we can understand their position. So we're matching to a degree how trying to match what they're feeling so that we can understand and understand how best to change the pattern to achieve what they want.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And what else? I'm looking for a specific, as in like, what do we need to do to have congruency? What are we searching for? If we didn't have it, for example, where it wouldn't work? What else could we do with a client? What else do we need to have with our client in terms of personal congruence?
The word rapport comes
strong. Yeah, rapport is true, but it's not exactly right. See, someone else can help me with this. What else do I mean? Chris, see, or Chris will do for me. Right in the center there. Let's pass it through. You're close, Si.
Christine 13:2. I was thinking, I interpret that as the certainty.
Yes.
To act with complete certainty that the new model you're presenting to our, that we're presenting to the client, that we really do believe in what we're saying to them.
That's it.
We're not just being half-hearted about it.
That's the key.
Issue for me that I'm
that's the key. The act is the key is acting as if certainty, because there are going to be times in your NLP career where you don't feel very certain at all. Now, from a conversational change point of view, here's what I mean. What you're basically going to do with your conversational change is you're going to deliver a conversational change language pattern. Now, what's the only way you're going to know if your conversational change language pattern is going to work? By delivering it. By doing it. The only way you're going to know if it works is by delivering it. Which means that you feel uncertain it's going to work. But you've got to act as if it does. You have to act completely congruently like it's going to work. If you say it in an incongruent way, it won't work. You have to act as if it's going to work, even though you have no notion that it's going to work at all. Because when you deliver it, if it doesn't work, what will you do? Deliver another one. Okay? Until you find something that works. Okay? And bear in mind the other thing. You deliver it like it makes sense. Even though it doesn't. That's the key. If you deliver it in a way like it doesn't make sense, it won't work. You have to deliver them like they make absolute sense. Because what happens is the unconscious mind then gets the change, even though the conscious mind is still trying to figure it out. And that's the key. Because most of these language patterns won't necessarily always make sense. Good. And it also works on plausibility. So for the conscious mind to accept it, it only has to be plausible. As in, it won't make sense, but it will be plausible to the unconscious mind. As I said before, science would like to think humans work on sense, but we don't. We work on plausibility. So you need to know that when we're using our language here, we're not using language as a way of communicating. We're using language as a way of restructuring the person's neurons inside themselves. We're restructuring and rewiring their nervous system rather than saying things that make sense. Because if it makes sense, what does it mean is happening? Well, from a neuron's point of view, if it makes sense, what's happening? All that's happening is running through what's already there. Does that make sense? It's running through what's already there. To have a different change, it's got to not make sense. Because when it not makes sense, that's what makes the pattern makes them turn away from each other. If it makes sense, it'll run through the pattern as it's already there. To make it break the pattern, to make it do something, to add confusion to it, what happens is you say something that doesn't make sense consciously. And then unconsciously, it will unravel it all for you. You'll find that more as we do the actual patterns. You'll see what I mean. Also required is light to medium trance, is also required. You'll have more success with your language patterns, and you have more change at the unconscious level the more you help them to be in a more medium trance. Because we're looking to depotentiate the conscious mind. We don't want the client thinking too much, because that's what they do already. They think too much about their problem. We've got to get them confused about their problem. We've got to get the problem moving. And lastly, present state associated. And obviously it's a general rule in NLP that you want the client to be present state and say, look, if the person comes in and they have a problem, but they're not associated to their problem, it's like their problem is this thing and it's over there, anything you do won't work. Because they're not in the problem. They've got the problem's got to be running. It's got to be active in the nervous system. Which is why you use your questioning technique in order to have to activate the problem in the first place. They're not going to like it. Now, basically, if you don't get them present state associated and you deliver a language pattern, it won't work. In fact, this is what the client will say back to you. They will say, I don't understand what you're saying, you're talking bollocks. That's what they'll say. Because they're not associated to the problem, so it's not working, because what you're saying doesn't make sense. So if they're thinking about it, they're in sense rather than in the problem, it won't work. But if they're in the problem and you deliver the pattern, it will basically rewire the person's nervous system. And it is very, very powerful to watch and to be witness of and to experience for yourself.